Araceli Esparza's grandmother picked vegetables for canning factories here in Wisconsin. Among the vegetables she picked were beets, which stained her hands with their color and their smell. Araceli tells us about how the smell of beets unleashed memories of her grandmother's hands.
Honoring las manos de abuelita y el movimiento de César Chávez y los trabajadores. Betabel. Betabel rojo, sabor de tierra húmeda, la cual nunca he probado antes de hoy.
Honoring the hands of my grandmother and the movement of César Chávez and the workers. Red beet, the taste of a wet earth, the one I've never tasted until today. The curious thing is that I already knew your taste through the hands of my grandmother who long ago picked you. She pulled you from our mother earth. She picked you in the camps of Nebraska and the fields of Wisconsin, and your color stained her hands. Your smell permeated her skin, and I remembered her in the taste and smell of a beet. I know because today I smelled you beet, and with the taste in my mouth of the humid and wet mornings, once again I was there, hugged by her, mi abuelita. I wrote this because I wanted to honor the work that my grandmother has done. You know, growing up, she told me about the unions, about caring for my neighbors, about caring for those who didn't have, and to cherish what we did have. I know she was also part of the César Chávez movement of, like, very much against the pesticides that were used. And I guess I wrote this poem after eating beets that were given in a class that I was substituting for. The beets were from a community garden program that gives their harvest to schools with a high percentage of children on free reduced lunch programs. None of them had tasted beets, the children, that day. And I thought I hadn't either. And the moment the bag was opened and we passed out the snacks, the entire room filled with her, mi abuelita's smell. Just that earthy morning, that fresh, like it rained last night and you can just feel things growing, right? I held back the tears while eating one, and I watched the kids inspect them, eat them, admire their color, and I knew then that it wasn't my first time eating one. I just never knew I had. Te jaló de la tierra madre, te piscó en los campos de Nebraska, en los fields de Wisconsin. My grandmother is 92 years old, and I'm sure her longevity has a lot to do with beets.
Tu color manchó sus manos, tu olor se impregnó en su piel. Recordé a abuelita con el sabor y olor del betabel.
Lo sé porque hoy te olí, betabel, y con el sabor en mi boca de la tierra de las mañanas húmedas, y otra vez estuve allí abrazada de mi abuelita, ella.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
We just heard about the common red beet that most of us might be familiar with, but we may not know there are a lot of different kinds of beets and they're developed right here in our state.
Joining us now to talk about the world of vegetable breeding is Erwin Goldman, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Erwin, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what kinds of work do you do in the Goldman Lab?
Well, actually, we're incredibly interested in the earthy flavors of beets, and that's something that was spoken of so beautifully in the poem we just heard. The beet is really about a sensory experience, I think, and a big part of that is the earthy scent and the earthy flavors that they have.
And you said that there's a name for that particular quality.
The compound that we're smelling there and tasting is geosmin, which means earth scent. Mm-hmm. And that is ubiquitous. It's in all the soil everywhere in the world. Every time you turn over soil, or as the poet said, when rain, the smell of rain, as rain drops hit the soil, that earthy scent rises up. And it turns out that beets have a strong association either with the bacteria that produce geosmin, or perhaps the beets have those bacteria inside of them that allow them to be more earthy.
Wow.
Now, before we get more into the science, and we just heard a poetical take on the beat, do you feel that too? Do you have that kind of attachment?
Absolutely. It is a sensory experience, from the color that runs on your hands and all throughout the plate, and to the scent. It really is a vegetable that I think people interact with in a very deep way. It's one of the reasons I love it.
So how did you first get involved in vegetable breeding, specifically breeding beets?
Well, actually, UW-Madison has a long history of working with the canning industry. And the canning industry goes back 100-125 years in the state. And in 1949, the Department of Horticulture began an active program to breed new varieties of beets to supply the canning industry. And the person who did that retired, and when he retired in the early 90s, I joined the staff and have been doing that work now for 23 years here.
So what makes a better beet? And I assume context is everything. I assume the answer is partly depends on what you're looking for. But what kinds of things do you try to improve in a vegetable like the beet?
Great question. You know, for some people, it's about sweetness. And some people would, you know, don't mind the earthiness, but they really want sugars. Some people don't want any earth scent, and they really want something very, very mild and sweet. For some people, it's the color. And we have yellow beets, and we have pink beets, we have striped beets. So they really are attracted visually to it, especially when you cut it open. And for other people, they like a roasted root vegetable, a savory flavor. So we breed for all those different tastes and all those different sorts of consumer ideas.
It seems like one of the advantages of beets and maybe other root vegetables is that often you have to sacrifice flavor for being able to be transported a long distance. So tomatoes and some fruits, they're trying to get them with sturdier skins, and maybe they don't taste as good, but beets are pretty hardy little vegetables.
They are, and of course, you know, people think of one of the images people have of them, of course, is the huddled masses bringing their root vegetables with them. And of course, that's part of the history of them. They're great storage vegetables. Whether in a root cellar or in a garage, they preserve for a very long period of time and really can be consumed throughout the winter.
Talking to Erwin Goldman from the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture, talking about breeding beets and other root vegetables. So how do you do it? What techniques do you use to build a better beet or carrot or what have you?
So you know, a big part of this is taking a plant that's a biennial. A lot of people wouldn't really interact with the beet or the carrot after the root comes out of the ground. But what we have to do is take that root and store it for about 10 to 12 weeks in a cold temperature. It's called vernalization. And once it comes out of that, we plant it in a pot in the greenhouse where the whole second part of its life cycle takes place, which most people don't ever see. Mm-hmm. The plant flowers, it produces beautiful flowers, we then pollinate it and make crosses, and we harvest seed the following April that we put in the ground again. So we take a biennial plant and make it into an annual for the purpose of breeding.
So talking about the different types that you might be choosing to do that process with and then crossing them with others, how do you know? You know, I'm guessing that there are many different kinds of beets that have X factor that you're looking for. How do you know which ones to mix so you're not losing out on other qualities?
That's a real challenge for any plant breeder. I mean, some of it is luck, where we make hundreds and hundreds of crosses and hoping to find the right one. And other times we have some insight, whether through by studying the genetics of the crosses we're going to make, we know we're going to get a certain type. So it depends on the situation. But a big part of plant breeding is trial and error. And we have to taste them. We have to share them with others to taste. We have to measure traits, and it's an actually fairly laborious process to find the one that we want.
I actually remember being at the Science Festival one year, and you had quite the array of beets there for tasting, and it was amazing how different the different flavors were.
They really are. I mean, it's, you know, there's some beautiful old heirlooms. There are some, you know, now we have wonderful colors and wonderful flavors. So a big part of what we want to do, and I think this is true for all of horticulture, is to try to find ways to connect with the consumer about the things that they love, the tastes, the smells, the colors, all of that. That's really what it's about.
What amazes me is we're in the age of genetic modification, and it sounds like at least a lot of the tools you're using are the same things that Gregor Mendel would have used back with his, were they pea pods?
That's
back
right.
In the day?
That's right. I mean, certainly one could do this with very sophisticated technology. Our program is really based on classical breeding, the old techniques really that have been around for thousands of years. And for plants like this, where selection is so visual and it's so much about the consumer experience, that works beautifully.
So you're talking about the consumers, but, you know, beets have been around for a long time. Do you see trends in how the consumer taste has changed over the decades? Are people looking for a different quality of beet now than they were maybe in the 50s or the 40s?
Yes, you know, when Martha Stewart did a piece on beets at some point in the mid-90s, I think, you know, where she's pairing it with goat cheese or roasting beets with rosemary, that really did change some consumer preferences, and people started looking at this vegetable in new ways. Whereas in the 50s, we might have been more interested in canned beets or soup with beets. Now there's many more modern takes on it.
I got to ask, what's your favorite way to cook, eat, and serve beets?
My wife has created this wonderful recipe, which really is to blanch them for a couple of minutes and then peel them and roast them in a baking dish in the oven, very, very high heat, about 450 degrees, covered with a little olive oil and salt and pepper.
I've done the oven roasting. I don't blanch them first, though. What does that do?
I think it just speeds up the process and makes it a little bit easier to cook them.
Wow.
But I think the roasting is wonderful, and it kind of, if you sear the outside, you get all that flavor on the inside. It's wonderful.
That sounds great. Do you also use beet tops, and is that something is that something that you're also looking at as far as what qualities you're looking for?
Very much. I mean, we've been very interested in the beet tops for nutritional purposes. They're also quite beautiful, but they have a lot of B vitamins like folic acid. They have beta carotene in them. They're really they have some excellent nutritional profiles as well as tasting wonderful.
Well, thank you, Erwin, so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Erwin Goldman is professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. We've been talking about his work on breeding beets and other vegetables.